En estos tiempos de polarización extrema y verdades alternativas,
hay datos, enfoques y evidencias
que bien podrían elevar la calidad de nuestra vida pública,
pero que como país, en demasiadas ocasiones, nos negamos a reconocer.
En este podcast de México Evalúa, nos dedicamos a cazar a esos elefantes en la habitación.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Elefantes en la Habitación, a México Evalúa's podcast. Artificial intelligence has infiltrated our life and daily routines. AI is everywhere, from social media to the chess algorithm we play with online and never defeat. But what can AI do for the administration of justice? What are the challenges in the implementation of these tools? What do governments around the world have done to solve them? What can we learn from them? Today, our host, Laurence Pantin, coordinator of the Mexico Evalúa's Justice Transparency Program, will discuss with Harold Epinus, executive director and founder of Amicus Curiae, the use of artificial intelligence inside governments and courts. We leave you with our host.
Hi, everyone, and welcome again to another exciting discussion about digital justice. I'm very honored and pleased to introduce you to Harold Epinus, a lawyer, researcher, and international consultant that has helped several governments around the world to implement artificial intelligence tools to improve the administration of justice. Thank you so much for sharing your experience with us, Harold.
Well, thank you very much, first, Laurence, for your kind invitation, and I'm very happy to be on air with you today.
I would like to start reflecting on something that you said last year during Mexico Evalúa's International Forum for Justice Innovation that caught my attention. I quote, "It is not about what AI can do for justice, but what can the law do for AI." Can you explain to our audience what you meant?
The participation to Mexico Evalúa's International Forum was indeed a great moment in which we could share views about the potential of the digital revolution to make sure our justice systems are stronger, more efficient, more user-centric, more accessible as well. But when it comes to artificial intelligence, I think the question is a bit different. You know, this new wave in the history of artificial intelligence based on big data and deep learning does not give us enough experience yet, enough feedback on the impact it has on our societies in general and our justice systems in particular to have a straight and definitive answer about it. So let me explain what I meant. I would like to start by quoting two authors here. The first one is a French jurist and philosopher from the 20th century, Jacques Ellul, you may know him. Ellul wrote a lot about techniques in general and wrote especially a book entitled The Technical Problem. At a time in the 80s where some colleagues with legal informatics background were actually thinking about the impact of the previous generation of computing on the law and not yet on justice. But Ellul, who had a very pessimist vision about the impact of techniques on our societies and probably too much pessimistic views, told us nevertheless something very important. He told us that more or less when techniques brings you something in addition to what you already have, don't forget it also takes from you something that you may not realize it takes away. So I think this is something we should remember with artificial intelligence today. I mean, if we see the advantages artificial intelligence tools can bring to the functioning of our justice systems on a daily basis, let's take a minute, a day, or even a year to think about what it takes from these justice systems impacted by AI. And the second author I would like to quote is a very inspiring one, as he continues to think and write about what is currently happening with AI. His name is Evgeny Morozov. You probably have read his different articles. And he has written famous books and articles on what he calls solutionism. His idea is that digital industries are selling solutions, which I think is what we expect and what we are attracted to. But we can't afford to ignore the problems that may arise also with the digital and not be obsessed only by the solutionism. And I think we start to see them now, if not the problems, at least the potential risk of using such technologies like artificial intelligence for wrong purposes, for disproportionate goals when we expect too much that it can't really achieve, or without quality checks both on how algorithms operate, the data that aliment them, and the use we make from the results of this AI. So when I said in conclusion to my speech at the forum that the question is not exactly or not only what AI can do for us lawyers or do for our justice systems, but what we lawyers can do for AI, I wanted not only to make a reference to what a famous president told someday in your neighbor country up north, but I was actually referring to the work that is being currently done in many forums, especially international organizations, about the limits to impose to a possible wild development of AI that may, at the end, jeopardize our justice systems and ultimately our democracies. And I think this is our responsibility. You know, I don't want to appear as a pessimistic lawyer myself, as Elul, but a responsible lawyer. We know about the potential of disruption the digital has in many areas of our societies. So I think our responsibility is to think really about and above the nice facilitating and accelerating things AI can do, think about how and where it moves our justice systems as we know it to something different and how different. Keeping in mind, for example, that we may still want the fundamental principles of a democratic justice, equality to access justice, independence of justice, impartiality, right to be heard, publicity, reasonable delay, etc. Well, these principles not to be jeopardized, but hopefully be ameliorated as a result of the importation of AI. That being said, of course, that the justice systems as we know them today, yeah, they are not far from being ideal sometimes and not ensuring fully and effectively the nice principle I have just referred to.
Thank you very much, Al. That's very interesting, Harold, what you mentioned, and I hope we can go back to that a little bit later. But definitely, I'm very interested in knowing how AI can be used as a tool to improve the administration of justice. Can you walk us through some of the projects that you've collaborated with, please?
Oh, yeah, sure. Let's explore the positive potential of artificial intelligence on justice. You're right, because there is one, obviously. My experience so far relates to projects led by both the private sector and the public sector. And this is something new compared to the previous generation of digital innovations for the administration of justice, in which public sector was leading first and private sector was supporting or basically developing the tools the justice systems wanted to implement. With AI now, I think it is exactly the opposite. The private sector is leading innovation and pushing, if not forcing sometimes, the public sector to act in reaction to the tools and services they build and are ready to disseminate in a market which is also different from the previous one. It is not the market of facilitating the communications between courts and lawyers, prosecutors, enforcement agents, neither the market of better administrating the courts with case management systems, for example, but a new market, which is a market of new legal and judicial knowledge and its related services that are developed by this private sector. I mean by that how a new way to explore legal and judicial knowledge will transform our vision of law and justice first and our relations to courts, to judges, to lawyers, and our relation to the resolution of our disputes too. So in this new environment, it is welcome that some research have been conducted associating actors from both sides, and I was fortunate enough to have an active role in this as associate researcher of the Cyberjustice Laboratory of Montreal in Canada and program director at the Institute for Advanced Judicial Studies in Paris, working with other fellow Europeans on this. And first concrete application I was involved in was in my country, in the country I live, France. I don't know why, but compared to other European countries, France seems to be the one in which the private sector is being very active in this competition with the public sector to embrace a new market of legal knowledge and dispute resolution with the digital platform revolution. So maybe because the public sector has for a long time left empty a domain that it was its responsibility to developer. And maybe also because the parliament decided to impose a principle of open data to the production of the courts, something that was supposed to create business value for the private sector, but something that was unrealistic, taking into consideration the current situation in France with court decisions that were not available for the public. So the value proposition of these new tools or services using AI, some examples, actually some pretend to use AI because it's a buzzword, but I have doubt it. They are really using AI. Anyway, we don't have an official definition of AI, but the value proposition is the following. What you think you know about the law, especially the one coming from the application of the law by the judges, is not the real law. And this is, I think, the really new invention of AI in the field of law and justice. First, why do they claim that? Because your view on the judge's production is not complete, a statement I personally agree with. And second, because they say only a scientific, meaning a mathematical look at this production of judges will reveal you what is really is in the substance of their production. So we started to assess in this project and continue to assess the reality produced by these tools to provide the government and beyond the government, the users, in order to explain in more details what these tools do and what they don't or even can't do. For example, some tools pretend to give you an anticipation of the results of your case with the elements you give before you decide to go to court. This is a concrete application, but which is more actually more an analysis of the case law related to your case with the case law available. But as the different tools do not embark the same number and diversity of cases, as all the cases are not all yet available in open data, and do not use the same algorithms, well, you will find a variety of answers from one tool to another on the market. And you find yourself asking these questions, who shall I trust more among these tools? They all pretend to say the truth about law and justice, but there are different truths that I can see from the results of these tools. So a different method we have worked on was claiming not to predict the outcome of a case as an application of artificial intelligence, but to reduce the random factor, the uncertainty of the process of going to court by exploring in the case law the important factors that make a decision and propose, in consideration of the elements of your case, a distribution of probabilities on a theoretical sample of, let's say, 100 judges. I will take a concrete example. Well, let's say in your case, the algorithm says that 45 judges over 100 would have awarded you an indemnization of, let's say, 10,000 euros. But we also find that 30% would have given you less, between, let's say, 7,000 to 9,000. 20% would have given more, between 11 and 12, and still 5% would have been giving you less than 5,000. So instead of telling you if you go to court, the judge will give you 8,500 euros because this is the average of all the amounts I refer to. It gives a distribution of probabilities. I think this is interesting, but you see a very different view looking at the production of the judges and the different services this AI can give to people, to lawyers and to the users in general. Now, these kind of tools may not be really useful in front of a judge. The question of their authority in front of a judge is still being explored at the moment, theoretically and empirically. There are actual tools to encourage settlements of courts, meaning impacting the administration of justice by reducing the number of cases going to court. That is mainly the purpose of many of these tools for the moment and how one can see it will ameliorate the administration of justice. But it is interesting to see that at the same time, you have less decisions produced by the courts because of these results of not going to courts and settle out of courts. The results of these tools built on court decisions will become less and less relevant with time. Now, based on a past and fixed picture of the reality of the law produced by the judges in that fixed past more than an actual one. And may I just add that in France, the public sector decided to use AI to create its own public tool in order to fix amounts of an indemnization based on case law. instead of guidelines that are simpler to implement, but officially forbidden in the French legal culture. And back to the open data of court decisions, another example of application of AI is in the higher judicial court in France, the Cour de Cassation, who is currently using AI in order to anonymize the decisions that will be put in the raw database. Open data means more than making the decision publicly available on website with a search engine, because this is really the idea, to deliver raw data that algorithms can easily compute, and something a human can't do, or at least at high cost, considering the number of decisions produced everywhere by a justice system. So in another context, another example, with the Cyber Justice Lab of Montreal, we started to think about application of AI in another field, in the field of online dispute resolution. In this field, some private companies claim to use AI to suggest a solution to the parties instead of having a neutral, as we call it in this field, a neutral that is human, pretending the neutral would be more neutral if it is an algorithm and not a human, which I personally doubt, but I would likely to say that it will be neutral in a different way, with its own bias coming from the data and the algorithm, maybe, but maybe less aware of them, of this bias, than a human can be if he or she well-trained. The choice we made with the lab was to explore something less wow, as we say, the digital culture, a chatbot that could inform the parties, pro-litigants, during the process about points of law or case law related to their case, to orient the negotiation, but not to suggest or even the best solution that can be. And last example, we're discussing now with a country from the north of Europe and another from the south, who are quite advanced in the development of IT in general, discussing about a public-led generation of IT tools and AI tools, not because we think the private sector has nothing to do in this, but because we think it is the primary responsibility of the public institutions to offer some kind of services and to protect the citizens against misleading developments of AI tools. And this does request to think about framework and strategy with decision makers and stakeholders before jumping into development of one tool or service after another. Governors shall not forget, I think, that it is there is a duty of judicial protection, as we call it in Europe, as a result of the Articles 6 and 13 combined of the Convention of Human Rights. They need to be proactive in this field and take AI seriously for both its advantages and the risk it creates as well.
Well, that's very enlightening, Harold. In fact, all those interesting projects that you've worked on and as you said, what I like about you is that you're trying to be kind of a referee for AI. You're trying to be very, conscious about the shortcomings, but also try to see what the advantages can be. And actually, that's where my question is leading. What are the advantages of implementing technological tools based on AI for the justice system?
Yeah, there are some advantages, and some have been already presented, I think, by talking about the ongoing projects. But I think they all turn around the same idea. Process a high quantity of information in a fast way, something human brain could not achieve and our budget couldn't afford, maybe, if we had to multiply the number of brains needed to process that amount of information. But anyway, never so fast, no way. And this is why some look forward to the next computing revolution, the quantic computers that will make it even faster. But what I think is interesting beyond that, beyond the technical challenge and imperfect knowledge of the limits too, is how AI is forcing us to rethink about the world design of our legal and judicial environment. And that is, I think this is a real advantage of what we are living now. For instance, we can ask, shall the judges still be the matrix, the central element in the system to adjudicate disputes according to law? Would this judge be augmented by AI to have a better knowledge of his or her own case law and the one of his or her colleagues of the other courts in a similar case? Or another option, shall the judges as we know it today, that system based on judges as we know it today, the last resort institution to which you submit a case after automated processes have adjudicated before, or it would better say processed and computed. Would your case be allowed to go in front of a judge based on the type of case, amount at stake, the opinion the institution has on the relevance or conformity of the previous decision taken by the machines? This is, you see, another example, another area. And maybe some will see some advantages to this new system. And after all, we can ask, would not it be easier if you could solve your problems by your own means and not go to the courts? The answer to that is, as you can see, not really technical about what AI can do. It is really political about what role you want AI to play in your institutional design and how disruptive you see and how the boundaries of your actual justice systems are put at the limits. Meaning, it basically depends on your conception of your advantages AI shall bring to justice. And the thing is, starting with empowering people with a better and more accurate knowledge of the law and a sense of a more open access to justice with new doors to push, would that be the door of a platform with only a computer behind a very effective process of enforcement connected to your bank account? Because let's say it is mandatory at the time you register to have one, and to process with one, or the account of your social benefits in the case you will be asked to pay a certain amount of money to the other party and that will be taken from your next payment by the administration or your employer. Well, starting by thinking, it offers more chance to access justice, especially for the poor. There is a possible risk that only rich people can, at the end, escape from this and afford to see a real judge, a human judge, in front of which they will be pleased to find back again a certain level of uncertainty they are able and pleased to play with. So wouldn't it be ironic and ironically sad to have this vision? So the advantages are clear, but they see that you can see that it requests really to think about how the what kind of justice system we want for the future with AI. And so to keep the advantages and not to put the system at risk, my call and my engagement as a researcher and as a consultant is to push the debate with all actors involved in a certain direction. Having a discussion about the solutions and the problems at the same time, and most important, invest in transdisciplinary and empirical studies at all stages of the reflection, design, implementation, and of course, assessment of the AI tools that you may be tempted to see as a solution of the actual problems of your justice system. AI is probably a big game changer for societies, no doubt, which are already societies under a lot of pressure with this century of big transition. So I guess we can't afford to do it the light way with AI, not remembering what Elula or Morozov, among others, told us about technology precisely.
Definitely. That's very interesting. And what you mentioned about the need to think about these decisions not just as technological decisions, but political decisions. I think it's also it has also a philosophical component, maybe. And actually, regarding that, I understand that you've contributed to develop the European Ethical Charter on the Use of Artificial Intelligence in judicial systems and their environment. And some AI systems are actually being questioned ethically. For instance, there is a heated debate on the use of AI systems to help judges determine a defendant's flight risk and bail in the US specifically. So what is your opinion on such tools? And more broadly, what principles or safeguards should be considered when developing AI tools applied to justice?
I agree with you, Laurence. This is primarily and highly political first. And the European Ethical Charter you're referring was born after we engaged a reflection with the European Commission for the Efficiency of the Judiciary, a body of the Council of Europe called CEPEJ. Then the work we started in 2016 resulted in the publication of a first document entitled The Guidelines on How to Drive Change Towards Cyber Justice and Give the Basic Principle of Digital Transformation to Member States, especially in the way to embrace change with stakeholders. And different spin-off instruments came up from this seminal work, and the theme of artificial intelligence kept up in the agenda of the Council of Europe after launching a conference we organized for the guidelines in December of the same year. especially because we heard about the problems with AI used in justice systems out of Europe, as you mentioned in your question. A conference in which the final session was dedicated to this. At the time, very original and not really explored yet, topics and questions, at least in Europe, were not really dealt about artificial intelligence, but we asked to the audience, artificial intelligence, an ally or enemy for law? And as I was saying, at the time, very few developments of AI and even less studies were concerning the legal and judicial domain in Europe. But AI was coming to other areas like health, finance, so it was just a matter of time that it comes to our world. The philosophers we invited, because it's also philosophical, as you mentioned, the philosophers we invited for this discussion, they discussed the issue of AI and law and did a great job by success because they inspired the representative of the member states who were present, and it was decided to put the topic on the agenda of the CEPEJ for the next year. And working myself regularly for CEPEJ, an expert, I'm very proud that this organization took the first instruments dealing with specifically with the issues that AI brings to the justice sector in relation to the values protected by our fundamental rights as citizens. And the Charter stands as an advisory document for European member states that are bound with the European Convention of Human Rights and the one on data protection too. But it can be also a source of inspiration or comparison for countries beyond Europe, of course, especially in Latin America, when you have an interesting regional system of human rights protection too. And the principles that shall apply are the following. First, a principle of respect for fundamental rights, that is to say, ensure that the design and implementation of artificial intelligence tools and services are compatible with fundamental rights. And the principle opens an area for research itself, as you can see. Second principle is a principle of non-discrimination that refers explicitly to the kind of issues and scandal you were referring to in your question. But not forgetting AI has not invented discrimination. I mean, discrimination can be done by human too. And in the case of AI, the problem is that algorithms will amplify and make normal the discrimination that takes place in the dataset of decisions given to the machine. Third principles to consider, according to the Charter, is the principle of equality, of quality of the sources of data and of security of treatment. And fourth principles deals with the concept of transparency, impartiality and fairness, which are principles reflecting the values, the current values of the justice systems. You know, would the AI treatment be an element or an output of these systems? An interesting principle that leads to the possibility to conduct in the Charter, it's mentioned, regular external audits of AI systems that are used in the justice sector exactly as a system of general accountability has to be in place considering the court activities as we know them today. And finally, a fifth principle claiming that users should be informed actors in control of their choices when it comes to use or be submitted to an AI treatment in the justice area. Well, some may say that there are interesting principles, but good luck to have them enforced in the real life. Maybe it is right, but I think that the work starts by awareness, and that was an indispensable first step to take, and that took the Charter. So if you have a look at the document that is available online on CEPEJ website, you will see that the Declaration of Principles is followed by a study referring again to some of the tools used by judges to assess risk of reoffending, among other illustrations. Well, my opinion on this, as you asked me, one is that these tools actually are not mandatory, or not mandatory yet. So if we have doubt about their relevance, and most judges have, even in the United States when they have been developed, research shows, they just need not to use them or be reminded by the public that they should not, and some as some NGOs do. What we expect really from a judge is not to find a magic trick, but to decide beyond agreements of lawyers or any information given by a tool, would it be AI-based or not? We can't encourage laziness in this area just to go faster or to provide comfort like the machine decided. It's not me, it's the machine who decided. But continue to raise awareness and make a public debate about the quality of these tools, just as the Charter does and encourages to do.
Sure, that's very interesting, Harold. In fact, I understand that in some counties in the US, the problem that I saw with these tools is that the judge was not forced to use them, but actually, if he decided not to follow the recommendation of the algorithm, he had to actually, to argue why. So it's an additional work for the judge, and it's actually an incentive for him not to decide against the algorithm, if I may say so. But anyway, those are the cases, I think, where, as you say, if it's not mandatory, it's okay to have the tool. But if it's mandatory, that can be a little bit more problematic, or not mandatory, but strongly, advised to follow the algorithm. But anyway, and actually to come to a conclusion, I think it would be really interesting for you to tell us some of your advice, maybe, for courts. What do you think they have to take into account when implementing AI-based tools? What would be your recommendations?
Well, I will go back to your comment and what I previously said. I mean, not to go into the direction of laziness, as you mentioned, resistance is also the courage of a judge. And that's why the public debate around the judges is important, referring to, the situation you mentioned, that you have a context that will encourage you to pass only a few minutes and few minutes less on a case using an AI tool, which is not appropriate. So this is very important to take into consideration this level of the courts and the judges, and not only to talk about general decisions about governments in this, meaning what can be done at a court level, whatever is done or not elsewhere. This depends, of course, of the judicial organization, and especially the prerogatives being given to the heads of courts, chambers or judges within the courts, possibilities of partnership also with its local environment and so on. I would like to insist on the necessary dialogue between courts, bar association, agencies or NGOs providing legal help, etc., to solve this issue and to find the fine tune for importing AI in justice and having the advantages and not the disadvantages. And I think first, it is fair to consider that if these AI tools provide a better, or let's say, a different knowledge of what a court and the judges actually do or could do, the first legitimate people to get this knowledge about their own production are the judges themselves. You consider, for example, you are a progressist judge. Well, look at the data. They show you are more conservative maybe than you think. You can accept or disagree with that image of you given by the computation of your decisions. So let's have a debate on this and how it should be handled. But I think this is not the matter of an individual judge. This is a matter of the court as a whole of a collectivity to be informed and reflect about the image that is given of the production and have clear position about his make it matter or discussion with your partners and have a consistent collective policy, meaning make sure whatever happens is in the interest of justice. To help with, the CEPEJ thought that we should go beyond the charter and think about the feasibility of a certification mechanism that could say whether a tool is indeed contributing to justice or undermining the justice. Not to push the boundaries too far, but to help also the courts and the judges to make an effective and efficient complaint against an instrument that will not serve justice. So I encourage you to have a look at the ongoing reflection on this. This is not an easy question, how to assess the quality of an AI tool, but this is for sure something we must continue to investigate in. That is also what we do at the Cyber Justice Lab, and act also, not think, but act. And what is CEPEJ considering doing in the future at the benefit of European courts that will be in position to request certificates when they see a new IT tool coming in their area and questioning it? Well, that is, I hope, an additional answer to your first question about, what we can do for AI, an AI that may have a chance to augment the justice system, but I hope not at the risk to replace it totally. The question, I think, is, again, a matter of collective responsibility.
Sure. Well, thank you very much, Harold, for your time. A lot of food for thought, I'm sure, for everybody who's listening to us. Really, it was a pleasure to have you today. Thank you very much, and I hope we'll get a chance to continue this great conversation in the near future.
Thank you for joining us for today's discussion. Today, we learned about the disruptive potential of AI for justice and about the different tools that are already using this technology for justice administration. However, it's our duty as lawyers, judges, and users to make sure to build with the help of these tools the type of justice we want. Thank you for listening us, and we will see you soon in the next episode of Elefantes en la Habitación.
En estos tiempos de polarización extrema y verdades alternativas,
hay datos, enfoques y evidencias
que bien podrían elevar la calidad de nuestra vida pública,
pero que como país, en demasiadas ocasiones, nos negamos a reconocer.
En este podcast de México Evalúa, nos dedicamos a cazar a esos elefantes en la habitación.